A couple of weeks ago, I spent some time with our communion class, with the children that are in our communion class. There's about 27 children this year, and I look forward to this every year. We have our communion class, and the clergy spend some time this year. I know Jen Dobrich has done some godly play activity with them as well, and it's just a fun time to be with them. And my class with them a couple of weeks ago was that we met here in the church, and my class that day was to kind of focus on what we do when we get together for the Eucharist. And so we talked about the vestments and what they mean, and we talked about the cup and the plate, the chalice and the paten, and all that's on the altar. We gave them a tour of the sacristy, which seemed to be the highlight of the day. They were intrigued by what's in that sacristy. Maybe someday we can take you all in there too to kind of give you some clues what's in there. And we also had them practice, you know, how to receive communion. But I wanted to spend some time with them, getting them at least to begin to understand a little bit of what it is we're doing when we get together like this. And I want to share a little bit about what I shared with them. I also shared this with the parents of the communion class last Sunday in a clergy forum. And maybe it'll help us to kind of engage with, I think, what our scriptures perhaps could be inviting us to this morning. I said to the children, have you ever had the experience of your family gathering together for a special meal? I'm not talking about the Monday through Friday meals where, I don't know, everyone's house is so hectic and not everyone necessarily all sits down together at a meal, but talking about those special times we get together, perhaps Thanksgiving or Christmas or a special birthday for somebody in the family where family members gather together or when friends gather together. And I said to the children, do you ever notice that when the grown-ups get together, they oftentimes gather in a room, perhaps it's a living room or a family room, and usually nibble on some food, perhaps have some drinks. And while that's going on, there's conversation going on, and the conversation oftentimes involves stories. Stories about one's family, stories about friends. People gather together and talk about, Uncle Joe or Aunt Jane, and they tell these stories. And I said to the children, you know, sometimes you may listen to the story and you may not be that interested in it, and sometimes you may, but eventually at some point you'll remember some of those stories. I gave an example to the parents last week. I know I've shared this before, my cauliflower story. When I was growing up as a young boy, we used to get together at my parents' house for Thanksgiving. And my uncle would come up from Manhattan. We lived just outside of New York City. And my Uncle Joe would come up from Manhattan. And I had my grandmother, my aunt would get together at my parents' house. And each year we'd get together. And my mother one year served cauliflower at Thanksgiving dinner. And this is when we were really tiny. My brother and I were really young. And my uncle, who's from Manhattan, he's lived in Manhattan most of his life since around the 1960s, and he loves Manhattan. He's a bachelor, a lifelong bachelor, lives on the east side around 1st Avenue and 52nd Street, and he likes to eat out a lot. He finds it more economical, as he says. But he shared this story at dinner one night. He said to my mother, Peg, you know, I love this cauliflower. You know, he kind of talks like this. I love the cauliflower. He says, you know, you can't find that in restaurants. You can't find that in restaurants anywhere in New York, in Manhattan. I don't know why. They don't serve it. They don't serve it. But I love having it here at Thanksgiving. It's just a great thing. He did that about 2-3 years in a row. When the cauliflower came around, Peg, love the cauliflower. You can't get this in any restaurant in Manhattan. For some reason, they don't serve cauliflower in Manhattan. And after a few years, my brother and I looked forward to him saying that. And actually, if it was near the end of dinner and he hadn't told that story yet, either my brother or I would pick up the cauliflower and say, Joe, would you like some cauliflower? You know, just to kind of elicit the story. Years have gone by, and we used to get together at my parents' house, and because of age and many other reasons, my uncle's not able to really get out of Manhattan, and he has someone caring for him in his apartment in Manhattan, and my parents have a difficult time putting something like that together like that, and each year we do Thanksgiving differently. But this past year, Mary and Rebecca and Elizabeth and I had Thanksgiving at home, and we were sure to serve cauliflower because it was part of the story. I think I was the only person to actually eat it, but it was part of the story. We have stories that we tell. And I said to the children, when we gather together on Sundays, We gather to hear stories. That's what we're doing when someone comes up here and reads from the Bible. They're sharing our family stories. They're telling the stories of our ancestors, our Jewish ancestors, and our early Christian ancestors. They're our stories. They help us to know who we are. Sometimes we may not understand what the story is about, but we hear the stories. Now, at home, when you're gathered with your family, at some point, someone comes into that living room or family room and says, "Hey, dinner's ready. Let's come eat." And everyone gets up and you come to the table and you have a meal together. And at that meal, you continue to be fed and nourished by food, but also continue to be fed and nourished by the stories that you're told. And I said to the children, that's what we're doing on Sunday. We come together, we hear stories of our ancestors and the family stories, our faith family. And then we come to the table to be fed and to be nourished at a meal. And we gather together, we have bread and wine, and we believe that Jesus is present in this bread and wine, and Jesus strengthens us and nourishes us as we go forth together. That makes sense. It's kind of what we're doing. It may sound simplistic. The history of how we're doing this is a rich history. But there is something to that about how we gather and how we're fed and nourished. Well, I think today's readings, perhaps, are some of those readings we might say, what? What's with the serpents on poles and snakes? And what is this all about? If you listen to that first reading this morning. And why don't we engage with those readings a little bit, not dwell on that, but this is the reading from the book of Numbers is a time in the Israelites' history where they had left Egypt and they're on their way in the desert to the promised land. This story is told in various books in the Bible, in the Jewish scriptures. And the people have left Egypt, and no matter what story you read, it seems to be similar. They are disgruntled. And they say to Moses, "Why are we here? The food stinks. You know, we had a better time. We may have been slaves in Egypt, but they're getting to the point where they would almost desire that than be in this desert." It sounds to me like, from our reading today, they must have been in an area where there were snakes, and people are getting bitten by snakes, people are dying, and they're like, "What are we doing here?" And the story says that what we hear is that God speaks to Moses. And Moses, this is, to me, a very brilliant thing. It sounds like scripture scholars say that the people in the area where they were, this kind of idea of serpents and things was part of the culture, part of the cult of that area. And what Moses does is take a symbol from the culture of his time and transform it into a symbol of Yahweh, a symbol of God. And Moses takes this serpent and says to the people, you know, if you are bitten by a snake or attacked by, look to this symbol. Look to this serpent on this bronze serpent on a stick. Not that this is God, but it reminds us of God's healing, God reaching out to us to be faithful to God as we journey on in this walk together. And then in our gospel reading, there's a reference to, as Moses did in the desert, so too will Jesus be raised up. And that symbol is being raised up on the cross. The cross being the symbol of the culture of that time, a symbol of destruction and death. And Jesus takes that symbol and shapes it into a symbol of healing and new life and possibility. Suggest to you that's some of the theological underpinnings of those two readings being shared today. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the experience of these Israelites wandering in the desert. They are wandering, they are wondering, they are questioning, they are grumpy, they are upset, struggling with their relationship with God. When did we lose that? When did we lose that? Why do we think today so often that shouldn't be part of the spiritual journey? Now, maybe you read it differently than I do. But sometimes people feel hesitant to question or doubt or wonder or wander or challenge or struggle with their relationship or belief in God. And we talked about this at the Lenten series I had this past week, and I hinted I might try to talk a little bit about this today. And I want to share a thought with you. I wonder if over the last, I don't know, hundreds of years, when someone wants to become part of the journey, Someone wants to become part of the church. Someone wants to become part of a religious tradition, whether it's, you know, in the broad sense, or someone even says, I want to become part of St. Paul's, or I want to be part of the Episcopal Church, or I want to become a Christian, or whatever faith tradition. Do you ever hear us oftentimes use the three B's? The three B's. Oftentimes what we say to people is, well, you want to be part of this? Well, here are our beliefs. B, beliefs. Here are our creeds. Here are our dogmas. Here's our teaching. Here's what we believe. Do you believe these? Do you believe these? And sure, okay. You know, okay, you know, we don't quite go this far. Okay, sign the dotted line. But there is language we use, you know. Do you accept this? Do you accept that? It's like a condition. And then we say, okay, those are the beliefs. The next B is behavior. Okay, believe these things, now behave accordingly. And if you can believe these things and act according to these beliefs, we might consider you belonging. Does that sound, maybe I'm exaggerating a bit, but does that sound somewhat familiar? Maybe not, but it somehow echoes with me. But when I look at the Israelites, look at the Jewish history, look at Jesus in the scriptures, what I find is not the three B's as belief, behavior, belonging. What I actually experience is them reversed. Jesus invites people to belong. Jesus invites people to join. How often do you hear Jesus say, hey, follow me, join us, walk with us? You know, start out with a few, ended up with 12. Belong. Be part of us. You never see in the scriptures Jesus presenting beliefs before people can sort of follow. But he invites them to follow. They have a journey ahead of them, but he invites them to belong. And, you know, when you belong to a community, a group of people, you begin to behave as that community does. You begin to act as that community does. We know that in our hearts. It's why, as a parent, you oftentimes ask your children, who are you hanging out with? Who are you playing with? You know that instinctively. You know, our children, who their friends are and who they're hanging out with, you know, we're shaped and formed by that in many wonderful ways, and as well as ways that parents could be concerned. But in the faith journey, I believe that we begin to belong. We begin to sort of become part of this belonging and begin to act that way. And all of a sudden, we get to the point where we may say, you know, I think I believe this stuff. This is starting to make sense to me. I'm beginning to see people's lives changed and transformed, and I want to be part of this. But I wonder if sometimes we have gotten so much that the beginning is right belief, right thinking. And yet, when I look at the scriptures, what my experience is, not so much right belief or right thinking, but being invited into relationship. Into relationship. And in that relationship, journeying forth together, belonging, walking, discovering, discerning, questioning, disagreeing, debating, wondering, wandering, sometimes whining. As we walk this faith journey, we're not called to necessarily all agree with each other from day one, but to be in relationship together and together walk and discover who we are, discover the meaning of our relationships, and discover the meaning of who God is in our lives as we journey into belief, as we journey into understanding, as we journey to come to know who God is. That speaks to me so powerfully. And I think so much in our own lives, in the stories we tell that shape and form us, in the relationships we've had as families, as communities, if we can live into that together, as a parish, as a diocese, as a church, to be in relationship, walk together and discover the wonder of God walking with us. So as we gather together today, as we did with the children a couple weeks ago, let's continue to hear the stories of our ancestors. Listen to how they walked this journey, how they walked into this faith. And let us continue to gather as we do, to hear the stories of our ancestors, to be fed and nourished at the table, and to go forth as a people in relationship, inviting the world into that relationship and making a difference and transforming presence as we live into the vision and the dream of who God is and what God has for all of us.